Hi there, this is Stephen Bruce, bringing you another of our research reviews, which is provided courtesy of the Research Review Service. Now, this paper is written by Dr. Kashina Malik. Now, this paper is entitled Early Multimodal Rehabilitation Following Lumbar Disc Surgery. It's a randomized clinical trial comparing the effects of two exercise programs on clinical outcome and lumbar multifidus muscle function. It was written by J.J. Herbert, amongst others, and the authors hail from Murdoch University in Australia, the University of Utah, Army Baylor University in Texas, and the rather grandly titled Telemedicine and Advanced Technology Research Center in Maryland. Anyway, these were published in the British Journal of Sports Medicine in 2015. And here's what the authors had to say by way of background. Lumbar discectomy is the most common surgical spine procedure. However, the clinical outcomes are poorly defined, and the post-operative management outcomes of this patient population has received little research attention. Therapeutic exercise, of course, is one aspect of post-operative management, and we think it improves outcomes following lumbar discectomy. A meta-analysis of randomized trials concluded that exercise programs 4 to 6 weeks after lumbar discectomy improve post-operative pain and disability. But there's little consistency, however, between exercise protocols, and the most effective rehabilitation approach is unknown. What's more, the timing of rehabilitation may impact outcomes following lumbar discectomy. Exercise and physical activity are often restricted due to fear of re-injury, re-herniation, and instability, and eliminating this activity avoidance and encouraging exercise immediately after the surgery may allow for an earlier return to function without increasing the rate of re-herniation or other complications. Reportedly, however, there's large variability in post-operative activity restrictions and exercise recommendations among physical therapists, rehabilitation clinicians, and spinal surgeons themselves. And lastly, the restoration of lumbar multifidus function may be an important determinant of lumbar discectomy clinical outcomes. Multifidus deficits have been reported to be associated with worsened prognosis following lumbar spine surgery, and injury to lumbar multifidus intraoperatively has been associated with failed back surgery syndrome. And as a result, a common rehab protocol for individuals with lumbar spine surgery is aimed at restoring multifidus function. Previous randomized trials, however, have not examined the effectiveness of an exercise protocol focusing on this muscle after lumbar discectomy. So the purpose of this study, therefore, was to compare clinical and muscle function outcomes of patients randomized to receive either early multimodal rehabilitation following single-level lumbar discectomy, consisting of exercises targeting specific trunk muscles, including multifidus, or general trunk exercise, and it seems that they found that those in the former group experienced greater improvements in outcomes. So how do they go about this? Well, this was a parallel group prospective randomized clinical trial following lumbar discectomy. The participants in both groups underwent 1 preoperative and 3 postoperative evaluations performed by an examiner who was blinded to the group assignment. The primary outcome was low back pain-related disability, which is a modified Oswestry questionnaire, and secondary outcomes included pain intensity on a numeric pain rating scale, global rating of change, sciatica frequency, and that wonderful word, bothersomeness. They also tested multifidus muscle function using real-time ultrasound images of the muscle thickness and percentage change from resting to contracted states. Now, looking at the participant selection, to be included, the participants had to be between 18 and 60 years old. They had to have a pre-surgical radiographic confirmation of lumbar disc herniation, which could have been either MRI or CT, and they had to be scheduled to undergo single-level lumbar discectomy. They were excluded if they'd had prior lumbar spine surgery, if they were looking at surgery at more than one level, if they were looking at a procedure other than discectomy, such as fusion, or if during surgery there were complications resulting in a contraindication to exercise. Now, what they did with this willing bunch of volunteers was to assess them preoperatively in a period less than 2 weeks before the surgery, and then they had their first postoperative assessment 2 weeks after surgery. They then completed an 8-week postoperative rehab program, which consisted of weekly supervised exercises by 1 of 3 experienced physical therapists. And the average was about 12 years in practice, and they also did daily home exercises, or at least they were told to do daily home exercises. They then had a second post-operative assessment 10 weeks after surgery, and a third one after 6 months. So a few statistics about the way the study was conducted. Of the 105 participants referred into the study, only 61 were actually recruited, and they were split roughly half and half into the specific and the generalised exercise groups. There were 7 perioperative adverse events, 3 in the generalised, 4 in the specific group, which did require further surgery. it wasn't thought that this occurred because of their exercise, and six of the seven were able to complete their prescribed exercise protocols. Two of the subjects in the generalised group did experience reherniation at the level of their surgery, and three subjects had dural tears during surgery. And two of those three were repaired during the surgery itself, while one became symptomatic within 5 days afterwards. When it comes down to compliance, it actually seems that the generalised group did a lot better. There was 69% compliance estimated in the generalised group, as opposed to 59% in the specific group. The authors also noted that four members of the specific and two of the generalised group didn't go through the ultrasound measurements afterwards due to what they described as body habitus, which I can only infer means that they were too overweight for the ultrasound to be effective. So, what was the actual intervention on this? Well, the generalised trunk exercise protocol had three parts to it. The first was aerobic exercise, which was walking initially for 20 minutes a day, but building up to a goal of 60 minutes a day. They also did a range of motion exercise, a sort of warm-up, which is 20 reps each of supine pelvic tilts and quadruped rocking into lumbar flexion extension. And the third part was strengthening exercises. The initial prescription was 5 repetitions of 5 seconds of quadruped single leg lift and side-lying horizontal side support, progressing from knees bent to knees extended, you know, effectively what we call a side plank. They did 10 repetitions of 5 seconds of quadruped contralateral arm and leg lift, I think it's what we call Superman's, and supine bridge with leg lift. 10 reps of 10 seconds of supine gluteal bridges, 20 reps of 10 seconds of supine abdominal curl-up, with the goal of progressing to almost double the repetitions and hold for each exercise. So I hope you remembered all of that. The specific exercise group protocol was the same as the protocol for the generalised group, but with the addition of the following exercises, and these were confirmed by a physical therapist with or without ultrasound imaging. They also did volitional and multifidus contraction, and they did an abdominal drawing in manoeuvre, and they did transversus abdominis and multifidus co-contraction. And during the first 2 to 3 weeks of the exercise programme, those in the specific group performed exercises, as I just described, which weren't included in the generalised group. But to minimise any potential effect due to the extra exercise, the generalised group did some additional range of motion exercises just to equal the total treatment time between the two groups. And each group also received an educational pamphlet on the importance of weight management, smoking cessation and stress management. Well then, what do we find out from this study? The authors have concluded that there were no statistically significant or clinically important differences between the groups in terms of pain, disability, global change, sciatica frequency or bothersomeness or multifidus function at either 10 weeks or 6 months. There were, however, significant differences in the improvement times from baseline for the same outcomes. And what we learned from this is that based on the results of the study, clinicians can be confident that patients who undergo lumbar discectomy can get improved outcomes with early rehab that's aimed at both general and targeted low back and core exercises. Each patient should, however, still be considered unique in terms of performance capability, potential reherniation incidence, presentation and intensity of symptoms, and so on and so forth. And these patients may require specific post-op management. Exercise education and supervision should be adopted by the practitioner to limit fear avoidance and improve clinical outcomes by addressing the psychosocial and physical components of recovery. Now, here's a personal note on this. Frankly, I don't think we learned anything significant from that at all, because we've simply learned that doing exercise is good for you after surgery, and we have to address the psychosocial components as well. Simple point there. I'm also a little bit suspicious of exercises which claim to target multifidus and other specific muscles individually. And I wonder myself whether functional exercises, you know, the sit to stand, walking exercises, things like that, might be every bit as effective as trying to do these targeted exercises. Anyway, that's the end of my little intervention there. Let's get back to the strengths and weaknesses of this particular study. On the plus side then, our reviewer says that this study provides us with justification for which exercises we should recommend early in the course of recovery from lumbar discectomy. It was also good that the authors assessed not only the clinical outcomes, which of course are more subjective, but they also looked at the muscle morphology, an objective measure of changes in the structures themselves. And they minimised bias in this by having the assessor blinded to group assignment and by maintaining the same total treatment time in each group, thus equalising the attention effect. On the negative side, of course, there was no control group, so we can't really work out whether the exercises themselves were any better than doing nothing at all, the effect of natural history or no intervention. The authors themselves highlighted the importance of psychosocial components, but of course they didn't evaluate this directly. There was no psychological outcome measure within the study. There was a large number of participants lost to follow-up, especially at 6 months, so some caution has to be exercised when interpreting the results, and I'm not aware what attempts were made to follow up with those people lost to the study. The six-month follow-up doesn't provide any insight into the longitudinal effects, and alternative methods such as MRI or EMG could have been used rather than ultrasound for evaluating multifidus function in future studies. So there we have it. Further work is still required to clarify the dosage and the frequency of the exercises, but we get some sort of insight into the effect of targeted as opposed to generalised exercise following lumbar discectomy. Well, I hope you found that useful and interesting. Don't forget you can download the full review from the website, and that of course includes the full list of supporting references.